New Southerners next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for another segment in a continuing series highlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. Randall Keenan is here now to read from and talk about two of his books, A Visitation of Spirits and Let the Dead Bury Their Dead.
Well, they tell me that that mound you asked me about was the center of town a long, long time ago. You know, this here town used to be called Tearshirt, they tell me, and before that, Snatchit. Won't see that in none of them textbooks they give you up in that university. No, see, this here place started as what they call a runaway, or maroon society. Heard of them, have you? Slaves run off from their masters, built up little towns and villages in the swamp so as the white folks couldn't find them. Live as free men. These lived over in what we call Thames Creek now, long time ago. Well before the war, you know, the war twixt the states.
Novelist and short story writer Randall Keenan. He'll be back in just a moment to read from and talk about two of his books, A Visitation of Spirits and Let the Dead Bury Their Dead. The program you're about to hear is part 10 of New Southerners, a continuing series highlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. New Southerners is made possible by a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center. Here's a recipe. Take a large helping of the staples of Southern fiction. Black people and white in small rural communities living near tobacco fields, saints and scoundrels, the aristocracy and the impoverished. Mix this with a helping of magical realism, the sort of thing coming from Latin America these days. The results are approximately what you'll discover in the fiction of Randall Keenan. But that isn't to say that Randall Keenan shies away from the southernness of his fiction, although his treatment of the South is anything but traditional. He writes about perennial southern literary themes, such as race, community, and history. Yet he also writes with tenderness and affection about aging, homosexuality, and the supernatural. Randall Keenan infuses his fiction with a palpable and present-day sense of his hometown of Chincapin, North Carolina. He also takes his readers on journeys into so-called maroon societies of runaway slaves during the 18th and 19th centuries. Randall Keenan is the author of two books, a novel entitled A Visitation of Spirits, which was published in 1989, and a collection of stories and novellas that appeared in 1992 entitled Let the Dead Bury Their Dead. The Chicago Tribune called A Visitation of Spirits breathtaking in its explicit virtuosity. The New York Times described Let the Dead Bury Their Dead as fierce and relentless, as memorable as anything in recent American fiction. As part of a continuing series highlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers, Randall Keenan is here now to read from and talk about both of his books. We begin with a reading from A Visitation of Spirits.
How could I communicate that I was not, did not want to be, the holy and pious dictator of a pastor they had been used to for all their lives, that my very presence had nothing to do with my condemnation of their way of life, that I couldn't give a damn about the still their husband Lucius had out in the woods behind the house, or how he and her mother sold all sorts of regulated beverages illegally from their kitchen, or that the last time they had been to church was to funeralize Marguerite's husband 20 years ago. There was no way to say, I have not come here to judge you, to say, I want to introduce a new way of approaching Christian faith, a way of caring for people. I don't want to be a watchdog of sin, an inquisitioner who binds his people with rules and regulations, and thou shalt's and thou shalt not's. But looking at those eyes, so full of past hurt and past rejection and past accusation, I could only smile and be what was.
Randall Keenan, welcome back to the National Humanities Center. Congratulations on your work here. You've been reading to us. Let's go back to 1989 and your first book, A Visitation of Spirits. Now, here's a book, Randall, that is deeply Southern and yet deeply uncharacteristic of the South. I mean, you're writing about black and white people, and you're writing about fairly explicitly about sexual themes, about homosexuality. How has that flown for you as a Southern writer?
Well, I figured, I didn't set out to, you know, make any big statements, i.e., well, we're changing Southern fiction, but it made perfect sense to me. The South had changed, and it was time for the fiction to come along with it.
Uh-huh. How do you measure that kind of thing, Randall? I mean, how do you figure out that the South is changing, and in what ways?
Well, I mean, in the 5 years, I was born in 63. By the time I went to high school, so much had changed, and before that, so much had changed. I mean, I only went to kindergarten in a segregated setting. Uh-huh. So, you know, and that was in 68. Yeah, that's when I was in kindergarten.
And this is Chincapin, North Carolina.
This is in Duplin, in the Duplin County Public School System. So that in and of itself, you know, is a benchmark of how quickly things have progressed. Mm-hmm. And so in keeping up with things, and then by the 80s, technology and the access of cable, computers, the new and better highways, I mean, that all had wrought a great deal of changes on the culture.
But aren't those really sort of superficial things? I mean, they don't go to the human heart in ways that you write about, or do they?
Well, I think they do. In many ways, they are. They are superficial, but they change dramatically. I mean, small things like cooking. My grandfather, who's 80 years old, has a microwave.
That's new.
Right. Uh-huh. People spend less time on the porch talking. You can go from New York to Chincapin in less than 3 hours. Uh-huh. From door to door now because of airplanes.
What about education, for example? I mean, I don't know that you are among the first of your family to be educated, but that's kind of a commonplace statement among white as well as black people. Here, even in the 1990s, I'm the first kid in my family that went to school. Did that make a big difference for you?
Well, I wasn't. I mean, I was a third generation. Uh-huh. And one of the second generation had a PhD, so I was... You know, I was expected to, you know, to toe that line. Uh-huh. That wasn't as much of the new thing. I mean, it was probably integration that marked me, and I think my generation as being different.
How is the church? How is religion the power, the agency of spirituality in the South? How is that changing things for you as a writer and in the region, generally speaking?
I think there's more of a clash between secular and religious. And that the people who are genuinely pious and those who are, you know, sort of outwardly pious are finding themselves up against the wall more often, being forced to defend themselves, uh-huh. Well, which can lead to some bristled attitudes.
Do you make claims for religion and again, to return to the themes that you treat in A Visitation of Spirits, sexuality, homosexuality, one's sexuality, do you make claims for messages that you're preaching in a book like that?
Well, one of my old professors, or one of my former professors, Lewis Reuben, always, he would read my fiction and say, what he's trying to do is, you're just trying to save souls. Admit it. But I demur. I don't. I mean, I always, one of the things that's very important to me is to distinguish between faith and mere religion. Uh-huh. Then, you know, the ritual and the outside show. And when someone genuinely believes something and acts upon that.
How do you conjure up these spirits that you populate your stories and your novels with, Randall Keenan? Again, A Visitation of Spirits is the title of the first book. Let the Dead Bury Their Dead, the second one. We have angels and supernatural things happening to everyday people.
Well, you know, down in Duplin County, that stuff is very much a part of life. I mean, when you think about it, when you believe, if you grew up as I did, believing very firmly in the Bible, mm-hmm. being told by all these authority figures about the devil and angels and the Lord taking prophets away on chariots, then, you know, when people talk about being visited by their grandmother and whatnot, it's very real. It's a part of the same tapestry.
All right, now I'm going to have you read for us again, Randall Keenan. Here is a passage from A Visitation of Spirits in which your title, your main character, a young black man whose name is Horace Cross. Got that right?
Got that right.
Here, he's going to experience himself at one remove. He's going to see himself in another version of himself. Let me ask you to read this, and then we'll talk about it.
Soon the entire face was obscured. Though Horace could recognize the face, the nose folk said to be just like his great-grandfather's, the lips rumored to be like his grandmother's, his father's determined chin, his maternal grandmother's sad eyes. But all was white now, finished in a white like porcelain, smooth and thick. The phantom picked up a brush, dipped it in what appeared black ink, and, with an uncanny grace, painted his lips a midnight black. He looked at Horace's reflection in the mirror and ran his tongue over his top lip, but the ink did not smear. He just stared at Horace, expressionless, giving no indication as to why he was doing what he was doing or what he would do next.
Randall Keenan, what's going on in this passage? The fancy word for it is the doppelganger, the other of oneself. How about it?
Well, Horace is at this point, this demon has, you know, taken over Horace's body or what have you, and is sort of directing him through, for lack of a better phrase, the stations of his life. And he's at one of the most recent periods. And at this point in Horace's young life, he's being acted upon, not only by his sexuality, but by the pressures of integration and being in two worlds, and being accused, particularly by his family and his black friends, of identifying too much with the white folk.
Now, is this you, Randall Keenan? How do we figure out the difference between you, the flesh and blood person who is the teacher and the writer, and then this literary voice that speaks to us in the pages of these books? How about it?
No, it is not me. There are lots of my component parts, let's say. Uh-huh. But, I mean, the character in the first novel I feel closest to is the nonagenarian aunt, you know, Ruth.
Rather than Horace himself.
Yes. I mean, you take bits and pieces of yourself, and you merge those with bits and pieces of others.
In other words, Randall on his worst day and Randall on his best day.
Exactly.
You look for these kinds of components.
Exactly.
Let's get back to the fact that you are a Southern writer, Randall Keenan. Is this a burden that you bear, or is this a label that you wear proudly? How do you figure that one out?
I wear it proudly. I mean, it's largely geographic, and it's also largely cultural. Uh-huh. And I do believe it's one of the two other, you know, distinct cultures in America. So, you know,
the other two being what?
New England, probably, and then they're probably parts of the Midwest. Uh-huh. But that's questionable, I think. Oh, and the Southwest.
Do you think of yourself, Randall, as helping to reshape the tradition of Southern literature? I mean, you look back at characters like Wolfe or Faulkner or, you know, O'Connor, you name them, and now you come along in this parade. What are you doing to it?
Well, I'm a pygmy standing on the shoulder of giants, to appropriate a quote.
You're also very modest.
Yeah. Well, I have no grand ambitions in that way. I mean, I think folk who do start out with those sorts of ambitions get run off the road. As Flannery O'Connor said, who wants to be on the track when the Dixie Special comes barreling through?
Absolutely.
Referring to Faulkner.
Do you think of yourself, Randall, as helping to reshape our understanding of ourselves as a country, as a nation? Multiculturalism is much on the lips of the educators and parents and kids these days, and there's a lot of infighting going on in our schools about this. Again, you represent a minority viewpoint. You grew up in the South, and yet the South is changing. Are you trying to change it?
Well, I'd like to hope that I'm making some contribution. I mean, again, I don't want to be self-aggrandizing, but I think there are points of view which people are in many ways thirsting for and don't find in their bookstores or in magazines or whatnot. So if I can contribute, you know, that voice to the general ongoing debate and discussion, I'd be very happy.
I want you to read for us now, Randall Keenan, from your most recent book here, Let the Dead Bury Their Dead. This is the opening passage of a story about a little boy named Clarence. Read to me, will you please?
On the day Clarence Pickett died, Wilma Jones's hog Francis stopped talking. Now, of course, no one else had ever heard the swine utter word the first. But Wilma swore up and down that the creature had first said to her Jesus wept on a sunny day in June. But But the peculiar thing was that Wilma had not known of Clarence's death when she declared the hog's final hushing up. And oddly enough, it was on the exact day of Clarence's birth, 5 years before, that Wilma had commenced preaching that the hog could talk.
Randall Keenan, we're talking about Let the Dead Bury Their Dead, your most recent book. What's happening in that passage you just read to us there?
Well, this is the beginning of a story about Clarence, who was this young clairvoyant child and who goes on to have many adventures, most of them with folk who are no longer with us.
Uh-huh. Now, did you know a Clarence? Were you a Clarence at some point in your life?
Well, no. The story, in many ways, makes fun of the sort of gossip that goes on around town.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, telling all these fantastic stories, you know, third, fourth-hand tales.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know any, but I certainly heard about quite a few.
Do you mean to tell me that this was a commonplace kind of thing in the churches, in the way black people talk to themselves in the South when you were growing up?
Oh, very much. I mean, it's not as advanced as something like Santeria or voodoo, but there are all sorts of anthropological syncretisms in which, you know, these very African themes of spirituality, like clairvoyance, communicating with the dead, are very much alive in African-American culture.
Are you some sort of an anthropologist of the South, Randall, as you look at your own culture and take it to the wider world of the United States, people who aren't Southerners, who aren't black?
Well, I think Southerners, as a general rule, are all sort of lay anthropologists.
Uh-huh.
I mean, just the way that they're interested in their genealogy, the way they're interested very piquantly in their own culture. I mean, you don't find that very often. Southerners are very interested in their manners and mores and derivations and origins, be it food or patterns of quilts.
Right.
I mean, I find that. And when they go away from the South, they're even more so.
Do you think that the South is in danger of losing its special identity? Are you at some subconscious level preserving the South from the encroachments of the other forces in our society?
Well, I think the most powerful force the South has on its side in terms of preserving itself is the fact that Southerners like it so much. And the only danger I see is it being made precious.
Uh-huh. They like it even with this terrible weight of this racial burden that as Southerners we all have inherited. Here, listen to me. I grew up in New Mexico, mm-hmm. but I think of myself as a Southerner now.
Well, but that's only one part of the experience. And in many ways, the race issue, the color issue, is a national problem.
Uh-huh.
Those parts of the culture which I think people are very eager to preserve are, again, food, ways of life involving, you know, that are slower, that involve family, extended family.
Are you optimistic as a Southern writer about what you see on the horizon when it comes to the way we understand and talk to one another about race in our country?
Optimistic. In many ways, I am. In many ways, that optimism is tempered by a realization that we're still in the fire in many ways.
Hmm.
I mean, we're still finding our way, groping, and in doing so, we take a lot of steps backward to take one step forward.
Well, now, I want you to read to me again here, Randall. Here's a passage from the beginning. It's right at the outset of Let the Dead Bury Their Dead, which is the title story in your collection, speaking of the burden of the past. Read to me, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, they tell me that mound you asked me about was the center of town a long, long time ago. You know, this here town used to be called Tearshirt, they tell me, and before that, Snatchit. Won't see that in none of them textbooks they give you up in that university. No. See, this here place started as what they call a runaway, or a maroon society. Heard of them, have you? Slaves run off from their masters, built up little towns and villages in the swamp so as the white folks couldn't find them. Live as free men. These lived over in what we call Thames Creek now, long time ago, well before the war, you know, the war twixt the states.
Randall, what have you just read to us? Whose voice have we heard here at the beginning of Let the Dead Bury Their Dead?
This is Ezekiel Thomas Cross, also known as Zeke,
uh-huh.
who is telling to a young Jimmy Green the history of Thames Creek, North Carolina. And it's a conversation between Zeke and Ruth Davis.
Now, what does he mean by a maroon society?
Maroon society or runaway societies, places that slaves during the antebellum South, before the war, blacks would run away, not to be found in swamps and in the mountains and all across the country.
Do you recall that, Randall Keenan, in order to remind us of this gulf that exists between the two races? Do you see it widening, or do you see it coming together, this separation that characterizes so much of your fiction?
Well, I think it's one aspect. There's another aspect, which is about getting together, both through love and, you know, procreation, and also just through friendship. And I think that the pathology of the problem has to do with the denial of that other aspect. Yes, there is this long history of separation, but so many of us are related and don't want to know it.
Right.
And that speaks very deeply to the problem. And the South is in many ways, you know, a hotbed for this denial.
Now, is that a particularly or peculiarly Southern phenomenon that you're describing there?
Not really. Not really. I mean, in my travels, I did research in Vermont, and a lot of blacks who escaped the South during slavery went to New England, and their progeny has sort of vanished because they were so much intermarriage through the decades.
Now, you mentioned your travels, Randall Keenan. Let's talk a little bit about this book, this project that you're engaged on now. You're traveling around the country, and you are you're watching yourself as a young black person encountering the rest of the United States in the 1990s. What's the title of this book?
It's called Walking on Water, A Journey into African America.
And what are you up to here?
Well, I'm basically sort of exploring the idea that black folk have a single culture and think the same way.
Do they?
Oh, well, no. And before I set out, I suspected that what you see on CNN and the Times Gallup polls and what have you were wrong in trying to cast black Americans as a single thinking monolith of liberal politics and what have you.
Well, I have heard it said that black people are essentially very conservative politically, and that when we talk of them politically, when we talk of them as a group, then we associate liberal politics. How do you account for that? What is this, some sort of split personality here?
Well, in many ways, I mean, African Americans constitute the sort of ideal of what it is to be an American in the quote-unquote value systems, ideas of hard work and that sort of thing.
Family?
Right, right.
What would your books, what would they be like without that idea of family? Impossible for you to write.
Pretty much. And, you know, and then it becomes very complicated when you start talking about discrimination. I mean, that has been glommed on as a very liberal notion and ideas of affirmative action and what have you. So it becomes very complex. And then also we have to take into account geography. Mm-hmm. I mean, people who live in the Great Basin think because of where they are and the factors that they encounter are very different from blacks who live in, let's say, New England or New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. So, can a black person who's a Southerner instantly identify with a black person who lives in Washington State or New Hampshire or Maine in a way that black person would not instantly identify with another Southerner?
I think there is some initial recognition, some initial sense of connection.
Is it just skin color?
Well, it's based on that. I mean, you can see someone just as you would see someone who belonged to a certain sort of fraternity.
Right.
But I think what's changing is that we no longer can assume that we have shared the same things as we did at the turn of the century. And that is changing a great deal. In certain parts of the country, I didn't. I assumed that connection was there, but the people I was assuming that connection with didn't assume it. So that's changing a great deal.
Randall, reflect for me on what you do as a teacher. The students that you run into, you teach at Sarah Lawrence, you've taught at Columbia University. As a writer, as a person, given that experience in the classroom, are you optimistic about race relations in this country? Are you optimistic about the way people are going to get along or not get along?
I'm very excited about this new, I mean, I don't want to date myself and make myself sound too old or too young or what have you, but the students that I encounter, I mean, they're one generation even further removed than I am from living comfortably with black folk and white folk together. I mean, the idea of segregation is historic, I mean, in very real sense to them. And I think that has very exciting possibilities. I mean, they had no anxiety whatsoever about going into this situation. It's a fact of life for them. And also things about, you know, sexism, you know, gender parity, and all sorts of other ideas. You know, they're not new to them. They're the way they think things ought to be. And mm-hmm. I think we're going to see some exciting things from them.
You think ideas like that are going to make headway in the South, in what used to be the South, the towns that you grew up in out in eastern North Carolina?
Well, in many ways, this was obviously the place where it was the hardest to happen. And in many ways, I think the South is on the forefront, ahead of other parts of the country.
Randall Keenan is the author of two books, a novel entitled A Visitation of Spirits and a collection of stories entitled Let the Dead Bury Their Dead. A Visitation of Spirits is available from Anchor Books Doubleday. Let the Dead Bury Their Dead was published by Harcourt Brace. Randall Keenan is at work on a new book entitled Walking on Water. Stay tuned for information about writing for an audio cassette of this program. The program is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. You've been listening to Readings and Conversation featuring writer Randall Keenan. For an audio tape of this program, send $10 to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. Please ask for program number 728. That's program number 728. The address again is the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, the zip code 27709. Randall Keenan's appearance on Soundings is part 10 of New Southerners, a continuing series highlighting the work of contemporary Southern writers. Upcoming segments will feature Brent Wade, Josephine Humphreys, and Robert Olin Butler. The music you heard on this show is from an album entitled The Devil's Dream and featured the Tarwater Band. New Southerners is made possible by a major grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Thanks for listening. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.